College Football Podcast with Herbie and Pollock. Now here's your host, Kevin Nagandi.
Week one almost in the books. It's a five-day event that is week one, and we close it up with a nightcap, Notre Dame, Louisville tonight, and that's where Kirk Herbstreit joins us from Louisville getting ready for the call. Herbie, honestly, it's been a fun 4 days. You're catching your breath. You've been at a variety of different stops calling a bunch of games. What's it been like for you experiencing this as you wrap up week one?
Man, it's been great. I think like everybody, everywhere I've turned, at least on social media, and everybody I've talked with is just like, man, college football is back, you know, and this is other than the fact that it's a celebration of the opening weekend, other than Oregon and Auburn going into the week as far as two ranked teams in a matchup, we didn't really have necessarily a ton of marquee matchups. And to me, this is a great reflection on why college football is so much fun. I mean, from Thursday night all the way to hopefully tonight, you always kind of expect the unexpected. You know, you get some upsets. You get some great individual performances. You get some games that you thought you knew what was going to happen, and you tune in and you watch, and, man, it happened completely opposite of what I thought. So that's, to me, what makes this sport so great is it's the way it's unpredictable and the passion and the energy that's obviously around it. And, you know, it's a great way to kick it off. And we get ready after tonight. We quick turnaround and we get ready for week two with some. Now, next week, we will have those marquee matchups.
Yeah. And when you look at the triple header lineup on ABC, Ohio State, Cincinnati at noon, Clemson, A&M at 3:30, and then the nightcap in primetime, LSU, Texas with game day 10 years later going back to Austin. Cannot wait for that experience in that environment. We'll get to that matchup a little bit later on the podcast, but you talked about individual performances. And I want to talk about the one that's kind of fresh in a lot of people's minds after last night, and Jalen Hurts making his Oklahoma debut. Three passing touchdowns, three rushing touchdowns, three incompletions. What did you see from Jalen Hurts in Lincoln Riley's offense?
I just want to know who in Hollywood is taking notes to be able to get ready to – well, let's wait for it to end, but who's going to put this movie together?
Yes.
Once his career is
it's
over?
It's the perfect 30 for 30.
It is incredible. It's the most fascinating story. And if you go back to when he left Texas out of high school and he goes to Alabama and he's competing with some high profile quarterbacks, Blake Barnett, if you remember, they opened up that year. I think it was with USC.
Yep.
Dallas Cowboys Stadium. And I remember calling the game and there was all this hoopla about Blake Barnett and who's going to be the quarterback that year. And Jalen Hurts came in and made some plays, and it was just kind of like, all right, the rest is history. And he led them that year into the national championship, came close to beating Deshaun Watson until Deshaun and Hunter Renfro's heroics. And, you know, he had a brilliant career until that second year in the net championship against Georgia when Tua became Tua, the Tua that we all know. And then, of course, last year having to sit around and wait and gets his opportunity in the SEC championship, graduates and ends up at OU. And everybody was bracing for, okay, how is he going to fit into this system that's won back-to-back Heismans and back-to-back first-round draft picks, the first pick overall? How's he going to be that next guy? And I think some people were cynical and some people were optimistic. And finally, we get a chance to actually watch him. And, man, from the very outset, he looked to be in command. I personally thought watching him run this system, and while Baker and Kyler ran the system they had incredible success, they both brought their own kind of flair or kind of fingerprint to their style in their particular year. And I think Jalen will do the same thing. And I think Lincoln is kind of a savant play caller, offensive mind, to me, the cutting edge play caller in all of football, including the NFL. And what he sees is he's got this big, powerful, experienced quarterback that can work wonders in his RPO game, running the football with great authority and power, almost like a running back, which is very different from the last 2 years. And then being able to also throw the ball with incredible accuracy and good decision making. So I don't know if they could have, they may not want to talk about it. I heard him last night talking about, well, we got a lot of work to do. We got to get a lot better. And I'm thinking, you know, it's week one. That's probably the right thing to say, but I don't know if last night could have gone any better for them in the way privately they scripted and hoped the start of his new career in Norman could have gone. You have three incompletions and you account for six touchdowns. I mean, that was the performance of the weekend by far in my mind.
Yeah, and the other side, and I understand Houston's going through a transition. Derek King accounted for 50 touchdowns a year ago, and he's in Dana Holgorsen's offense. Their defense, when you look at Oklahoma and Alex Grinch, the new DC, they looked fast. And again,
absolutely,
it's one game, but that's a huge difference from a year ago where the narrative was Oklahoma has to score maybe 50 to 60 points to win each game. Here, if that defense just shows up and is mediocre, then it's a different conversation of how we view the Sooners, in my mind.
I'm glad you brought that up because, you know, there's so much to talk about in the opening weekend, and what probably will get lost in the shuffle, at least for now, in the opening week, is what you just brought up. And that's why I'm so thankful you did that, because Alex Grinch came over. It was a big emphasis by Lincoln Riley. They had to get better on that side of the ball. You're right. They did not want to be recognized as Big 12 team that just has to outscore everybody that they play and give up 30 or 35 points a game and just rely on that offense. And I think the defensive personnel took that on a personal level. Mm-hmm. I think Alex Grinch has done a good job of simplifying and attacking. If you watched that defense last night, you saw a very different look. You saw a team that looked like has a new identity. And let's not forget that they're going to be facing teams in Big 12 that are capable of scoring a lot of points, but they're not going to be facing many more quarterbacks that have the skill set of King and who they faced last night. So I think they were amped up and fired up. It was a home game, opening game of the season, but I think they're especially fired up to feel that challenge that people put on them and to face King and Dana Holgorsen in their first matchup. And to give up 400, right around 400 yards, only 167 passing yards, that's an outstanding effort and a great starting point for them to reestablish that OU defense and get their confidence back as they get ready for the rest of their season.
We'll be back in a minute, but first a word from Allstate, because mayhem on Saturdays in the fall is inevitable. Mayhem happens on the field, off the field, and in the polls. Mayhem lives on the wind, in the rain, on the foot of an errant kick, and during a trap game. You'll find mayhem in the parking lot, during tailgates, charcoal that's not totally out, an errant football through a window, a flat tire, a lost side view mirror, etc. You get the point. Allstate protects you from mayhem in the parking lot and outside it, at home and away. You can't stop mayhem from happening, but you can get better protected from it with Allstate. The potential for mayhem during the playoff race is rampant. Underdogs, trap games, unexpected weather, etc., etc., etc. Get better protected from mayhem with Allstate. Contact your local Allstate agent today. You and me are in the same boat. We both have picked Texas to get into the college football playoff, but man, I cannot wait to see where this Sooners defense is in the sixth week of the season. I want to see where Texas is, especially coming off of what they did against Louisiana Tech as they get ready for LSU. The other big news when it comes to quarterbacks that happened yesterday, JT Daniels and USC. You talk about all the pressure on Clay Helton coming into the season. Now he loses his quarterback. He has to go to a true freshman in Keaton Slovis as Daniels tears his ACL and his meniscus. And this schedule, Herbie, for USC for the next 6 weeks is absolutely brutal. And you could say it's probably the toughest schedule I think any team will go through in a six-week stretch when you start with Stanford and you have teams like Washington, Utah, and Notre Dame on that schedule.
Well, and for a coach and Clay Helton, who, if you look around the entire country, coaches potentially on the proverbial hot seat as they come into the season, who would be those coaches? He would probably be the leading candidate from even his own fan base. So they beat Fresno State and they get the devastating news of their starting quarterback going down for the year. We wish JT Daniels, of course, all the best in his surgery and his recovery and rehab. Hopefully he'll come back stronger than ever. But with that being said, I think this is a really good example of what teams are dealing with all over the country. You potentially play your starter. You get concerned about what, you know, he might do. And once if you go back to Clay Helton saying, well, you know, it's a quarterback battle. I think all of us were kind of scratching our heads saying, quarterback battle. JT Daniels, he was the starter as a freshman last year. What do you mean battle? But now if you start to understand why, one of the backup quarterbacks, Fink, left in April, entered the transfer portal because he didn't think he was going to win the job, and then somehow he came back. And then once they did finally announce, they had to at some point announce the starter last week. They, of course, announced that it's going to be JT Daniels. And then Jack Sears leaves.
Yep.
You know, he's in the transfer portal. So you've got a lot of coaches that are dealing with this and just hoping that their starter ends up staying healthy. And now you have to turn to a true freshman that you know, a lot of people wondering who Keaton Slavis is. You know, he gets into the game and kind of managed the game because of the lead. I don't think they really put him in a position where he's going to throw an interception. It was just like, let's hold on and get ready for the rest of the season, go back to the drawing board with, you know, with our new young quarterback. So it was a completely different mode than what he'll be asked to do when they play Stanford, you know, this coming game, this next game that they have. And as you mentioned, at BYU, Utah, going to Seattle, going to South Bend. It puts this team that already has, I think, an enormous amount of pressure to win games. It puts Clay Helton and this SC team behind the eight ball, and we'll see how they respond with the young quarterback as they get ready for Stanford, who looked pretty good themselves with a nice performance against Northwestern at home, taking care of them by 10 points.
And then there's the unknown with KJ Costello after suffering that injury, taking that forearm to the head. He had to leave the game, so as of Monday, we're still in the unknown about his status there. But, you know, Helton's coming off a 5-win season. We haven't seen back-to-back losing seasons at USC in decades. We'll see how that plays out. So that was the storyline from yesterday when you talk about quarterbacks. There were two other big storylines from the weekend, and one of them was how the SEC East looked, and it did not look good outside of Georgia with the devastating loss for Tennessee to Georgia State, and how South Carolina lost to Mack Brown and North Carolina, a team that won two games, Missouri losing to Wyoming, and then all the talk about, hey, what about the SEC? My argument is this, and this is not us being favoring a conference. Well, I know that is a narrative, but the reality is when you are in the playoff era, if the top teams do well, that's what really matters. And the top six teams in the SEC all won this past weekend, or at least in their opening game. So while a lot of people are bashing the SEC East, as well as they should with what Tennessee did to Georgia State in the biggest upset of the weekend, the SEC still has, when you look at the top, you still have Alabama, you still have Georgia, you still have LSU, all looking very good to start their season.
Yeah, I guess I look at it this way. Of course, the SEC still has teams like Alabama, you know, teams like LSU. You can throw in Texas A&M, was a big game with Clemson this week over in Death Valley. Auburn found a way to win a game we'll talk about here in a little bit. Florida and Georgia in the East. But even though they're top of that conference is still, you know, there's a lot of them to be excited about. I think the one thing that in my mind has typically separated the SEC from other conferences to me is always the depth. Like if you get into these debates with people about who has the best conference, it depends on how you view it. Some people look at it like, well, look at the top three in the SEC versus the top three in any other conference. The SEC is the best. I personally look at that, but I also look at kind of the equator of each conference. Well, where are they at 5 and 6 and 7 and 8? And anytime teams like South Carolina play, you know, in a game against North Carolina, who's, let's face it, the perception is they were in rebuilding mode with Mack Brown in his first year, and Tennessee is playing an inferior opponent in Georgia State, and even Missouri playing, you know, a team that they should be able to. I mean, all the talk in Birmingham was about Missouri. Hey, who's the surprise team? Oh, it's Missouri in the East. It's Missouri.
They can start 8-0 the way their schedule shook out, right?
Yeah, 8-0, Kelly Bryant. Oh, look out for Missouri. Hey, here we go with Missouri. So I don't want to poo-poo this and say, oh, it's no problem. You know, I think that they lost three games, and if this was the Big Ten, we'd be talking about that, or if this were the ACC. So these were embarrassing losses. Tennessee and the entire country, mm-hmm. That was a historic loss for them. And to see that Neyland Stadium in the third and fourth quarter, more than three quarters empty, We should talk about Tennessee in a little bit because, you know, I have four boys and two of them are 19, one of them 17, and we live in Nashville, Tennessee, and the last one is 13. And I was telling my 16-year-old, I said, you realize since you've been alive, Tennessee has been irrelevant, you know, as far as what their standard is. And y'all, to me, because I always go back to Tennessee 01.
Yep.
Is when Tennessee was Tennessee. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they could bring up 04 all they want. They played Auburn in the SEC championship, but that was not a great Tennessee team. I'm talking Tennessee, to me, their standard is to be where Alabama is right now, mm-hmm. or where LSU is. Like, they are supposed to be at the top and arguing at the top of the SEC. And the last time they could do that was Travis Henry and Travis Stevens and Jason Witten and Casey Clawson. I mean, think about that. You're talking 18 years ago. So you imagine how disgruntled the Tennessee fan base. This is nothing against Jeremy Pruitt. This is 18 years of mediocrity by their standard. You know, they're not comparing themselves against Kentucky's history or Vanderbilt's history or South Carolina's history. They're Tennessee. And so to lose to Georgia State after being in the middle of this 18 years of frustration, I can only imagine what the fans are dealing with in Knoxville this week and what they're looking at with their future of this season and kind of where they go from here, because, you know, there's anguish and it's toxic right now. And you just wonder how they can fight out of that hole when they've been struggling here for a number of years. So that was a tough one, obviously. South Carolina, I happen to pick North Carolina. People on game day kind of laughed at me. I have a lot of respect for Mac, but I also realized that even though he was playing a young quarterback in Sam Howell, there was a lot of skill around him, and I knew that Mac would have his defense playing with some edge and some energy, kind of newfound youth and just a different attitude seemed to be permeating out of Chapel Hill. And sure enough, they were able to go out and win that game. That one, to me, doesn't feel as bad as the Tennessee and Missouri losses, but it was not, top to bottom, it was not what the SEC probably or the conference imagined when they got ready for week one.
And Herbie, to add to your point with Tennessee, what stood out is how they lost. They didn't lose on like a last-second field goal. They lost to a Georgia State team that just honestly punched them in the face in the third and fourth quarter, and it looked like Tennessee's defense said, we're not ready for this. We don't want anything to do with this. And that, to me, is stunning when you have Jeremy Pruitt and this fan base and how they shifted and, yeah. and they got the coach that they wanted through that Alabama pipeline, and now they have to deal with figuring things out. Phil Fulmer has to figure things out. And the one thing that also stands out when you bring up the history, it's been two decades, you know, in the late 90s, the Peyton Mannings, the T. Martins and stuff. When you look at where they were dominant and you look at where they were surrounded in the country, in the area where they're at, 20 years ago, Alabama wasn't Alabama dominating. And Georgia was still getting some players, but they're not like what they are doing now. And Clemson is on a different level. So when you look at Tennessee 20 years ago, they could dominate an area when it comes to recruiting. And they can't because they're surrounded by programs now that not just dominate their area, but dominate the country. So for me, that long term for Tennessee, this game is a devastating situation. But long term, it's like, all right, can we look at down the road in year two, Jeremy Pruitt? Where are the bright lines? Where are the moments where you're like, okay, but we've got somebody coming up in that pipeline with our recruiting class, and I don't know if Tennessee does.
Well, I think it if you're just looking at right now, you know, they lost to Georgia State. By the way, Sean Elliott, you know, I know you know all about him,
yes.
his story, you know, Appalachian State guy who came up as an O-line coach and worked his way through the SEC. South Carolina, spent a lot of time in South Carolina's. At one time with Steve Spurrier's line coach and becomes a head coach at Georgia State and had that team ready. You made an outstanding point about how they won the game. I mean, they were churning out drives of 10 plays, 9 plays. Just, it was not a, oh my gosh, the ball bounced off his shoulder pad up into the air off the defender and I caught it and we won the game. It was no. We're going to come right at you. We're going to run the ball right at you and challenge your defense's heart and see if you can respond to it. And they just seemed to get more and more confident. And Tennessee seemed to be questioning things more and more as the game went on. And Georgia State deserves all the credit. So we don't want to take anything away from what they achieved. But the bigger story, I think, is for Tennessee. Where do they go from here? You got BYU, who's not an easy opponent, mm-hmm. at home. And you have Tennessee Chattanooga. Then they go to the Swamp. Then they have Georgia. Then they have Mississippi State. Then they go to Tuscaloosa, home against South Carolina, UAB, at Kentucky, at Missouri, Vandy. I mean, I think for them, it's 1 week at a time.
Yeah.
But you could very easily say, other than Chattanooga and UAB, and by the way, those aren't givens based on what we saw last Saturday, where are the wins coming? Where do you see the wins coming? So we'll see if they're able to kind of regroup, but just exactly how you did not want to start the season for the Tennessee Vols.
It's scary, too, because in 2017, 4 wins. Last year, 5 wins. Like you said, you would be hard-pressed to maybe potentially get to 5 wins right now, considering the performance that we saw against Georgia State and the way the schedule shakes out. All right, let's go to the game on Saturday night. It was the best matchup on paper, and it turned out to be, to me, the best game of the weekend, and the legend of Bo Nix and figuring things out in the final 90 seconds, but with Oregon giving Auburn so many opportunities. You're up by 15 points in the third quarter, and you're like, okay, this is it. This is fine. This is the reason why Herbert came back. The line, they're all back, and this is something for the Pac-12. As that game was going along, what was your feeling and how you were seeing the progress of Bo Nix getting comfortable in the offense, and also what Oregon was doing in trying to not lose this game, and it turned out that they did.
Wow, there's so many different ways to go with this. Let me just start with the excitement of just being, you know, it's week one. It's a big time matchup. You're inside Jerry Jones' stadium there, and there's a buzz that feels like a big time bowl game is the best way to describe it. Like, there was a lot of pride and a lot of want on the line for both these teams. They showed up ready to roll. And that's what made the game, I think, so exciting. And to give Oregon a lot of credit, I don't know if Mario Cristobal could have imagined things starting off any better. I mean, they came out. He's trying to change the culture in Eugene. And when you think about what's the perception of the Pac-12 and maybe Oregon, it's, you know, it's built on speed and what Chip Kelly created. And I take toughness, by the way, when Chip Kelly was there. But the perception on the outside was they were more about speed and flash and uniforms. And so Mario Cristobal is trying to go in there and teach them about toughness. And, you know, I think they lost some of that when Chip left, and he's trying to kind of reestablish that. And so the entire offseason, to be in the weight room and to be taught about toughness and all that, and who better to be challenged by than an SEC team like Auburn? And they go up 14-3 yep. in the first quarter. I mean, 14-3. And their offense and defense both just doing everything that they wanted to do. And then there's two things happen. We're watching the true freshman, Bo Nix, who's waited his whole life for this moment, grew up worshiping Auburn because of his dad and the way he grew up as you know, an Auburn fan, and now he's in that uniform. And I think the game was moving really fast for him early. He was feeling a lot of pressure. He was at times scrambling when he didn't need to scramble. Because this kid's been able to rely on his athletic ability his whole life. He's running around trying to make plays. Oregon had everything covered, and he's making a lot of mistakes. And yet, at the same time, the Auburn defense made some adjustments by Kevin Steele. They started to get after, you know, what Oregon was trying to do offensively, and Herbert started to get a little uncomfortable. And then all of a sudden, we get into the second half, and you know, everybody talks about the first week is a game of adjustments. Well, give Kevin Steele all the credit, along with Gus Malzahn, because they came out and looked like a different team in the second half. And the defense kept them in the game. And then, of course, Bo Nix eventually started to kind of make some plays. And I thought the running game also with Booby Whitlow, started to kind of find a few creases, and the offensive line started to play better. And all of a sudden, Auburn got some confidence and clearly got the momentum. And then, of course, they made the plays down the stretch to be able to win the game. Could not believe, by the way, the last play. I'm thinking, you know, I mean, right? You're thinking, oh, I know you're watching. We're all watching, like, all right, they got the first down. Let's get in the middle of the field. Let's see if this kid can make a field goal to try to win the game. No.
Yep.
heave-ho, heave-ho for the touchdown. I'm just like, oh, my God. I couldn't believe it, but
it was one of those passes. It was one of those passes. If you're an Auburn fan, you're like, no, 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 what are you doing? Yes, you know, and then the reaction with Gus on the sidelines when they made eye contact, it just felt like Gus got his guy, you know?
Yeah, yes, yes, exactly. And I don't even know if you and I had a telestrator and we were breaking this down. I mean, the play, the way it unfolded, he was trying, I think, to go to his left in the flat,
mm-hmm.
and the corner came up and took that away, and so because he took it away, he didn't have a check down, so instead he kind of reshuffled his feet, and he saw his big, tall receiver, Seth Williams, and he thought, well, he's big and tall, and he's got an advantage, and that safety's kind of out of position, what the heck, and he thought all of that in 0.5 seconds, and he throws it up high, hoping that the 6'5 receiver can make a play on the ball, and it's underthrown, which allows him to come back, and the safety was out of position. He's a guy that we didn't call his name all night. He's a third-string guy, and just wasn't able to make a play on the football, and Seth Williams, who had a quiet night, finally did make a play, and Auburn goes home happy. And the cool thing is you got a true freshman quarterback who gets to learn a lot of mistakes that went on in the first game, and they still won. And for Oregon, man, I thought this is just a gut-wrenching loss. They had played so well, and you got Herbert back for a big year, and they can still have a great year, but they're going to have to show some real maturity and being able to kind of go back to Eugene and pick up the pieces and get ready to take on. I believe they have Nevada. And maybe Montana after that, before they get into conference play.
And if you look at the rest of their schedule, according to FPI, I saw before that game, if they were to beat Auburn, they were favored in every other game the rest of the way. So you look at that situation, how they lost. If they go, let's just say, 11-1 the rest of the way, then they have to hope and pray that there is some chaos at the top, right? And that there are there's one or two bad losses that stands out for them for the idea to get back into the conversation, especially for the conference and how things have been kind of the narrative and how people view things, which I think is unfair because we're looking at this team individually, but that's the reality that sometimes you see it that way and say, all right, we have these three teams in the top 15. Who's going to separate themselves from this conference in this conference?
Well, let me just say this because I think that this is a really good football team and they got a really talented quarterback. The question will be if they are able to kind of pick themselves up and start to win some games, you start to look at their schedule and how many teams they currently anyway are ranked. And outside of Auburn, you know, you got Stanford that's currently ranked. You have Washington that's ranked. You have Washington State that's ranked. And as we sit right now, those are the only three teams that remain on their schedule mm-hmm. that are ranked. And so winning games will help, but beating teams that are ranked obviously can help propel you back up. I think that they should be rewarded for having the willingness to play a team like Auburn. So if they do start to pick up momentum, they would be a team that I would be willing to give a kind of a nudge to over other teams that maybe didn't play a non-conference schedule that included a team like Auburn where they traveled all the way to Dallas to play Auburn. Teams that do that need to be rewarded when we get to November and December and we get into these discussions about this team or that team. You know, if you played Nevada and Montana and, I don't know, you know, name another team, and it's a bunch of – it's three easy wins mm-hmm. versus a team that's willing to play Auburn, and a game in which you played really well and led most of the game, I don't think you should necessarily be penalized if – now, big if – they're able to go one, you know, win one, and then win two, and then get to 10-1 and 11-1, and they go to the Pac-12 championship, and they're sitting there potentially with their only loss to Auburn, and the way they lost, you know, I don't think they should be penalized for that.
I'm with you. And at the end of the season, who knows where Arizona State is, and you got to hope that Arizona State is a ranked team there just to help their resume if they were to get a win in a situation like that. But you're right. Like, what's the point of scheduling a tough team to start the season if it's going to bite you and no one cares about
right.
it, right, at the end of the season?
Right. Right.
And that's the biggest fear. I think that's the biggest fear that ADs have. Well, why am I going to do this? What incentive
I have some monetary incentive and exposure incentive, but what incentive am I going to have when we're talking big picture getting into the playoff? One team that's not going to, that wasn't a playoff conversation team, but to me, it was a thrilling contest that we saw was in Tallahassee and Boise State and what they did in that second half with a true freshman, Hank Bachmeier, who was incredible, chucked the ball 51 times. He was hit so many times in the backfield, but at a certain point, something clicked and something changed for Boise State. And then you could say the opposite with Florida State, a team that was up 31-13. And then they somehow get shut out and they have no idea what they're doing in the second half. When you hear about this and what Florida State was trying to do and trying to get over the hump and then what Boise State just did with a true freshman, what are your initial thoughts?
Jalen Hurts' performance was special, but what Boise State went through. Now, let's backtrack.
Yep.
Boise State's going to play Florida State in a neutral site in Jacksonville, and because of the threat of the hurricane, I think it was Thursday they announced that just to be safe, they're going to move the game into Tallahassee for a home game, a home game for Florida State, and they're going to move the kick back to noon Eastern. It's hot in Tallahassee Saturday afternoon and late August, right?
Yep.
It's humid. It is brutal for a team that's Boise State coming out of Idaho. And we've seen them do it with guys like Zach Zabransky and Kellen Moore in the past. And here comes little old Boise in to take on Florida State. And Willie Taggart is desperate, much like Tennessee, to get off to a good start. After all the noise in the offseason, he's made some different hires. He's had Kendall Briles running the offense, and they need to hit the ground running. And that is exactly what they did. 21-6. And they're out having fun. They're taunting Boise State after touchdowns. They look like Florida State is they're on their way to score 80 points.
Yeah, they got the swagger, right? The swagger was there in that first quarter.
Yeah. Chirping and scoring touchdowns, and they're going to score 80 with this new Briles offense. That's what I thought. I'm sitting there watching. I'm like, gee whiz, these guys. And boy, poor Boise, they got this freshman quarterback. What a tough way for him to kind of be welcomed into college football. Then you just kind of, you know, like you, we got five games on. You're still kind of like, well, Boise's still hanging in there. What's
exactly.
Going on there on that, you know, well, but they're still in this game. And then all of a sudden at halftime, it's like, I don't know, it was like 31-19, maybe. It was like 31-19, 31-20. You're like, you know, they're theoretically, they're still in it. When they score another touchdown in the third quarter, now all of a sudden you're watching Florida State is tired.
Yes.
They are worn out. And this Hank Bachmeier, if you've not seen Boise play against Florida State, do yourself a favor and watch Brian Harsin's team and watch this freshman quarterback. He is, to me, one of the stories of the opening weekend is watching Bachmeier do his thing. And as you said, taking on Florida State and the defense that's hitting him, he showed incredible toughness to continue to fight back, continue to give his team a chance. He got a lot of help, you know, with players around him. C.T. Thomas had a bunch of plays. Mahoney was running the ball. They just looked like typical Boise, the little engine that could. But I was so impressed with his energy, the look in his face. He looked like a tough – I love toughness out of quarterbacks. And that Bachmeier really, really demonstrated that this first game. And Boise, I think, has a real shot to become that team that everybody starts to talk about as a group of five. Who's going to be that team? I think Boise State's going to have a pretty good argument this year with that kid leading them.
Two things that really stood out in that as that game went on, and you mentioned that Florida State defense got tired. They were on the field for 40 minutes when you look at time of possession in Tallahassee. So Boise State has to be prepared for that heat. And they got those boxes where they're sitting in there to cool themselves down. And yet the offense was running the show because they were 10 of 19 on third downs. Meanwhile, you know, the Kendall Briles offense, and you think, okay, yeah, this is it. This is what they've been waiting for. They go 1-for-12 on third downs, and you have that up-tempo, and then the defense got to come back out there, and these long drives by Boise, and it really cost them. I want to talk to you about two more things before we wrap things up. First off, let's get to LSU-Texas. Early thoughts on a matchup like this. It's going to be your game, prime time on Saturday night on ABC. College game day is going to be in Austin. It just, the whole vibe is there. First ever SEC Big 12 top 10 matchup in the regular season ever. So when you have this in a week two, it's fantastic for all of us. What are your initial thoughts as you get ready?
Well, I think it's going to be, I think the weekend is going to be outstanding because of what we have, throughout the day. You said 10 years. I can't even believe that.
Yep.
There was a time, we would just go to Austin either every year or every other year. And to think that we've not taken the show down there for 10 years kind of tells you, how Texas has been rebuilding this thing for a while. And I think a lot of us, when Tom Herman was hired, thought there was a pretty good chance that he would get them going. And I think, he's got a great quarterback to lead them and Sam Ehlinger. But he also has, I think, recruited a different level of athlete, not just at skill spots, but, you can look at linebacker, safety, corner. They just look different, and I think they've got an experienced running back now in Keontae Ingram. So I think there's excitement there, and there should be. They also all of a sudden have found this new energy at home games, which is totally new. Even when they were winning and their really dominant years with Mac Brown, that was never what I would call an intimidating atmosphere in Austin. And I think based on what I've seen last year, they've made some inroads to make that a very difficult place to play. So for LSU, another team that I'm as excited probably to watch Joe Burrow with what Joe Brady's doing with him is coming over from the Saints. You and I talked about that last week, this
yep.
new RPO game and what Burrow will be able to do with that. He was on fire last week. I know it's a lesser opponent, but kind of like Jalen Hurts, it was 23 of 27, 5 touchdown passes, 278 yards. And so I don't care if you're against air. That's a pretty good day throwing the football. And so Burrow in this new offense and all the athletes that LSU has, both teams are thinking about the playoff. Both teams are thinking about trying to win their conference. Both teams need to win this game, I think, to try to achieve their long-term goals. So you put two teams on the same field with that in mind, I think it should be a lot of fun Saturday night, 7:30 kick Eastern on ABC.
Yeah, and the Joe Brady stuff, you're going to hear about this all week, and I love this story, how Orgeron decided, this is my guy. Saints come in, he's on the Saints coaching staff. They, a year ago, before the season started, they meet up with the LSU coaches, the Saints coaching staff, and Orgeron was moved by Brady's talk to the staff. So when they were looking for somebody,
right,
it's the first thing he thought of, I want that guy. I want him to be part of our offense. And I can't wait because I at a certain point we're watching, LSU the other night against Georgia Southern. I'm like, don't show us everything. Make sure you keep everything, that playbook doesn't go all the way out. And we have some pages
right.
that we're going to hide for this Texas game because I want to see that matchup where both teams and both offenses open things up. Cannot wait for that. Okay. So before we wrap things up, it was really cool. I'm a father to three kids, two boys who are 7 and 5 that love football. You're past that. You're well past that. You've got teenage boys.
Yeah.
But seeing your reaction Thursday night at Clemson where your twin sons, Ty and Jake, are in warmups. Ty's a wide receiver. Jake's a cornerback. What was that experience like for you as a father surrounded by football? Your kids grow up, playing the game, and now you get the chance to see them on the field.
Yeah, that was just surreal is probably the only word that I would be able to describe. I my kids have always I've always done a really good job of letting my kids they lead their lives.
Mm-hmm.
I help guide them and try to help them from time to time. But I kind of like my dad did with me. I try not to be a dad that's overbearing or tell them what they're going to do. This is their thing. They went to a high school in Nashville and many of the kids at that high school, they'll go play sports at Division III, liberal arts schools, many times up in the up in the East Coast. And I thought, if that's something you want to do, go for it. But the world that they've been around, they've traveled with me, for really their entire lives. And they go to big games all over the country, and that's all they've seen is big time college football. And so they decided that they'd gone to a Clemson camp and done enough at the camp. For Dabo to call them and say, guys, we want you to be preferred walk-ons and love for you to come to Clemson and let us know because we only have a few spots. And if you want to do it, we need to know. And of course, they jumped at the opportunity. And as a dad, there's probably about maybe 6 or 7 coaches in the country that I'd be comfortable with, knowing what I know about the sport and just the direction of the sport when it comes to preferred walk-on.
Mm-hmm.
And Dabo would probably be at the top of that list. And so when Dabo talked to me about it, we went and visited and sat down with him. He told them his personal story about walking on in Alabama and what he experienced and what he had to do and all the little small victories that he tried to achieve, you know, along the way to be becoming eventually a starting wide receiver for the Crimson Tide when they went on to win a national title in 92. And my kid's eyes were just wide open, sitting there listening to his story in his office. And so for all that, to kind of, they've been away from home for the first time since June, really working out 6 a.m. all summer and going through, you know, lifting and hanging out with these guys. What blew me away about this program was the superstars in the program, how welcoming they've been to not just my kids, but all the freshmen. I think that's really what makes that program what it is. It's not like, who are you, kid? It's more just like they welcome them in and make them feel part of the family. And so for my guys to be out there and being welcomed and being a part of it, you know, the defending national champs, and to act in the manner in which they act, that to me was probably the most surreal part of it, is the program and the culture that Dabo Swinney has created. And for my guys to be a part of it and being out there in warm-ups and kind of being in their own element, that was cool. And then as the game went on, my kids obviously are going to redshirt, but as the game went on, the game got out of reach, and Ty ended up getting in, I think, the last series, got the chance to play. So that was also special for him. But, yeah, overall, just a great night, because it was a great night for them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, being a parent, when it's a great night for your kids, it's a great night for you as well.
That's all that matters. That you just want to see your kids' happiness and succeed. And when you – I'm sure you talked to them. What was their experience? Again, it's one thing to be on the field and be around big games. It's another to suit up. What was their experience like to be on the field for a moment like that for Ty and Jake? Did they tell you what that experience was like?
Just blown away.
Cool.
Just, could not even believe it. But at the same time, they're seeing it through the eyes of 18, 19-year-old kid who has dreams of one day trying to contribute. So they're looking at it like this is part of the process. Dads, like you and I, we look at it like, oh my gosh, this is incredible. I can't. And they just look at it like, hey, this is the first step. This is what you're supposed to do. This is, you know, I think they were overwhelmed with joy and this is so cool, but I think they looked at it like, yeah, this is what we do. Dad, we're on the team. You know, this is kind of, but at the same time, just to be wearing that uniform and to be out there, you know, I think they were overcome, I think, with emotion, but at the same time trying to keep it in perspective and just enjoy the moment.
Herbie, I love it. Appreciate you sharing that story with us. Cannot wait for this weekend. Game day in Austin. Get you set for LSU Texas. That game primetime on ABC. Want to remind our listeners, thank you so much for your support. Remember, subscribe, rate, and review. Looking forward to next Monday, Herbie. Thank you.
See you, buddy. Have a great week.